Welcome to State of the State, the monthly roundup of policy and research for the state of Michigan, brought to you by the Institute of Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University and our friends here at WKER Studios. I'm Arnold Weinfeld, Associate Director of the Institute, and I'm joined by Institute Director Dr. Matt Grossman. Later on, our guest will be Sue Ann Hammersmith, Executive Director of Michigan's Independent Redistricting Commission, to discuss the work of the commission. Well, Matt, yesterday's announcement by the CDC has sent a lot of different groups and people scurrying. A lot of relief, of course, that we can now wear or not have to wear our masks outside. But what do you think this is going to do? I mean, the feds have said that it's still up to state and local jurisdictions as well. Seems to put a lot more pressure now on those entities to follow CDC guidelines.
Yes, there were some immediate responses, and we're still responding to the previous CDC guidance about the no masks needed outside. And both East Lansing and the university actually just complied with that or went along with that this week. So it may take a little while, but it certainly is filtering down and signs of a return to normalcy and part of a pattern of policymakers trying to provide incentives for people to get vaccinated, seeing everything from free beer to entering a lottery in Ohio if you get vaccinated.
$1 million.
So lots of incentives to get on board.
Almost makes me want to go down to Ohio and get more shots. Charlie's not here to talk about implications on the economy, but given it's summertime, given we're loosening these restrictions, are we going to see something of a social boom and a lift to the economy over the summer now?
Well, I'm not a prognosticator, but I can tell you what's already happening, which is that we saw a large increase in economic activity and our first signs of inflation this month. And that's already provoking some political and policy responses. And so the debate could change from just where we were at the beginning of the year with all the talk of need of stimulus.
And of course, ransomware attacks on major pieces of infrastructure like the Colonial Pipeline don't help smooth the situation either.
And close to home, the car industry is also having to respond to the chip shortages, and that actually produced an increase in used car prices. That was the biggest sign of inflation. It might be temporary, but the auto industry is also having supply issues.
Well, the fact of the matter is that was announced this week guidance from the Federal Department of Treasury on use of the American Rescue Plan Act funding. Michigan's actually getting more money than they thought, something just over $6 billion to the state and a little over $4 billion directly to local governments. We had a forum last week at IPSR, a legislative staff training, where we invited the directors of the House and Senate Fiscal Agency, as well as we had the deputy director of our Department of Management and Budget. What'd they have to say about the budget and what they're seeing?
They said there's a lot of new money coming in. it is a substantial increase in the state budget over the next couple of years, on huge portions of general fund that are going to be coming from the federal government. And we're still spending the dollars from the previous COVID relief bills. So the budget situation is looking a whole lot better. But this is temporary money. And so they were definitely cautious about the sustainability of these kinds of desires to spend the money. They also noted that infrastructure funding may be coming down the road and that policymakers wanted to spend this chunk on infrastructure, but might have to wait for additional dollars. But the broad pattern is definitely a lot of money is coming to the state. This is one way in which we benefit from a higher than average unemployment rate and some other economic indicators. So Michigan is getting more money. And of course, this week on Tuesday, we'll have a forum on the money going to local governments, which we've talked about on the podcast, which is also an enormous amount of money, and is going disproportionately to the hardest hit cities. So this big redistributive debate that we normally have in politics is taking place. The Democrats really do send more money to poorer areas and spend more money through government spending.
I've been in discussions with representatives from the statewide local government associations. You noted our forum on Tuesday. We'll have with us Dr. Eric Scorsone, who runs Michigan State University's Local Government Finance and Policy Center. And the message from the organizations and many right now is to take it slow, plan out, especially at the local government level, how you want to use this money. It is one-time money, as you noted. So even as people are banging on the local or state officials' door saying you've got all this money, you know, why don't you spend it? It's going to make a difference for sure over the next couple of years. But there still seem to be some concerns with the long-term health of the state budget, are there not?
Well, unjustified concerns, because we've gone through this story before. The state budget went up in 2009 and 2010, not just in Michigan, all over, in response to the federal stimulus dollars, and then crashed 2 years after the rest of the economy crashed, because that's when the stimulus funding ran out. So people are conscious of that. You know, even the most left pro-government side of the spectrum is calling this funding for state and local governments enormous. So it does seem to be a far different scale than we've seen before.
No question. Transformational is once in a generation or terms that people are using. And then regarding infrastructure, of course, some of the current funds can be used for sewer and water infrastructure. I've heard locals in particular talk about that, and broadband expansion. So there is a piece of this that can certainly be used for those means. You know, it seems to me too that given the amount of funding that's coming our way, and we just kind of touched on this, one-time funding. You just noted that after the last stimulus, that you know, after a couple of years, you know, reality set back in. The platform of problems with Michigan still remains. Our reliance on manufacturing, the inability of local communities to raise funding at the local level, the number of tax and revenue restrictions that are here in the state. So, I think you're correct that after the next few years, we're still without a really strong overhaul of our economy and new residents as well. And I know that that's something that we'll be talking about here in a little bit with Sue Ann as well. Michigan is going to find itself probably in the next few years in the same state of affairs. And the car industry is turning over too. EVs are becoming going to become more prevalent. The manufacturers here in America are making a commitment to producing electric vehicles down the road, although China is way ahead of everybody as usual in that effort. What do you see as policy political implications moving forward? You noted that it's possible we might see another large tranche of money in infrastructure, and the president has also announced the family plan, the family jobs plan, to address issues like childcare. You just noted that when Democrats are in office, a lot more money gets spent outward. Given the very close split in Congress, I know you said you're not a prognosticator, but what do you think the chances are we'll see two more large packages of funding?
I'm happy to prognosticate on policy and politics. I just leave the economic trajectory to Charlie, because what do they say? Economists have successfully called the last three out of, I don't know what it is, the last 12 out of three recessions or something like that. So, the basic message is going to be that the spigot is going to be cut off at some point. The opening year of a presidential administration is usually the biggest one policy-wise. There's no guarantee that we're getting a whole lot more money. We have spent a big tranche in the first COVID relief bill. There's two large proposals. We'll get something out of that. But as soon as we get around to midterm election year, with the Republicans favored to regain control of the House, we should not expect that funding to continue forever. That said, we still are seeing policymaking. Biden has made politics boring again, so no one's paying that much attention. But we actually are potentially about to double the National Science Foundation, for example, but we're calling it an anti-China bill about manufacturing workers. So that's pretty typical of framing. But Gary Peters actually just got an additional couple billion dollars into that bill, which is going through the Senate floor. To be directed toward auto industry efforts. So we should see some additional policy, but the money at some point is going to be cut off, and we'll be moving in a different political direction. Michigan, of course, just saw that we did gain population in contrast to the previous census, but we gained population at the fourth, I think, slowest rate across the U.S. states. So we still have the same structural issues that we have had, and they aren't being solved by this one-time money.
Well, you just noted that President Biden is making politics boring. Certainly, though, National Republicans are not making it boring. And you just mentioned the midterm elections in Congress. The House Republican Conference decided to remove their number three leader, Liz Cheney, for not sticking to the proper messaging. So it would seem that certainly congressional Republicans are already gearing up for the midterm elections and making sure everyone's towing the line. What do you make of the Liz Cheney piece?
Yes, well, clearly we're still having debates about Trump well into the Biden administration and the Republican Party, and you really can't openly run against Trump in the Republican Party, and you can't disrupt the party message as Liz Cheney has been doing over the last couple months. I'm a little bit less on the side of that this somehow means that Trump is still in control. I think it means that the party doesn't like to have open squabbling be the message that comes out of their retreat. There's also an interesting ideological dimension. Liz Cheney is actually right in the middle of the Republican caucus ideologically, whereas Elise Stefanik, who's likely to replace her, is actually more liberal than 98% of House Republicans. So it's actually not a move rightward like we traditionally see in these House leadership elections. If anything, it's actually sort of a move to the center.
So is it fair to say that the cult of personality as compared to the cult of ideology still is prevalent within the Republican Party?
I think it's just fair to say that people just don't like internal squabbling to dominate the headlines in a political party. Yes, it certainly can be interpreted as, you know, they're still behind Trump. But, you know, this is the same group that voted all but 60 people to retain Liz Cheney just a couple of months ago. So I think since we had the before and after and the policy positions really didn't change, that this really was about her public messaging and her, you know, continuing public squabbling with Trump.
Well, speaking of midterm elections, as we enter the 2022 election cycle, states are preparing to revise their congressional districts and their state legislative districts. Every 10 years after the census, states go through this process. Here in Michigan, we approved a ballot proposal last cycle to set up an independent redistricting commission, as a few other states have done. And with that, I'd like to introduce our guest, Sue Ann Hammersmith. Sue Ann was appointed executive director of Michigan's Independent Redistricting Commission last year. As I noted, this is the body approved by voters to set forth new legislative districts for state and federal office. Previously, Sue Ann was CEO of the Lenawee Community Foundation. Welcome, Sue Ann.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here today.
Why don't you take a few minutes to discuss the work of the commission as you've organized and moving forward?
Well, the commission started with their first meeting in September, They have undergone quite a bit of continuing education. We thank Dr. Grossman and others who've helped us in a variety of ways with educating the commission about the process that they will undertake. We've done a lot of outreach to cities, townships, and counties, engaged over 30 statewide organizations, so groups such as the League of Women Voters, the NAACP, the Michigan Nonprofit Association, to be involved in the work of redistricting and helping to get awareness and the word out to people that they can engage in the process. So we're really excited about going on the road. We started this week with public hearings in Jackson and Kalamazoo, and we'll have 7 more weeks of public hearings throughout the state of Michigan to listen to the people and what they want to tell us about the districts that would best represent them.
Very important part of the process. I did see the list, and you do have numerous public hearings moving across the state. And Matt, Sue-Ann noted that experts such as yourself are assisting with the work of the commission. What do you see as the key issues the commission needs to work on, and how are they going to apply all of the criteria that's in front of them?
Well, the Constitution does give them a long list of criteria for the maps, so we're not to that process, to that part of the process yet, but they're already thinking about them. The big one that's high on the list is that the maps have to reflect communities of interest and the diversity of the state. And so one thing that people will be submitting is their ideas about what communities of interest they live in or what they should look like across the state. The main piece I've been trying to help with is just the diversity of these criteria. They also have to not provide an advantage to a political party. They also have to reflect local boundaries and be compact and be contiguous. And of course, at the very top, comply with the Voting Rights Act. And all of those are a lot more complicated than it might sound to draw squares on a map. So we've been kind of taking them through that process. Sue, what are you hearing so far about, are people submitting ideas about communities of interest? Are they submitting maps yet? Or are we just getting kind of broader comments from the public?
We have received great comments from the public about the districts that they would like to be in. But the public comment portal also launched about a week ago. And we have lots of maps drawn in that portal that have been submitted. So it's really exciting to start to see the work coming together.
And so what can citizens do? They just go to the Independent Redistricting Commission website, and then what are they able to do there?
So if they go to michigan.gov/MICRC, they can go right into the public comment portal from there, and they can submit comments on that. They can draw a map for the whole state. They can draw their community of interest, and they can also comment on other maps that have been drawn. So there's lots of opportunity there, and we're really excited that tool is available to us to collect all this data.
And then there's also these in-person public hearings. So what's happening at those, and how are citizens submitting their comments there?
So 16 public hearings throughout the state of Michigan. We have been to Jackson and Kalamazoo this week. Next week, we're going up to the UP to Marquette and then back to Gaylord. And we'll be throughout the state over the next several weeks. So the public hearings are on Tuesdays and Thursdays. The list is on the website. All start at 6 p.m. And we encourage people to get there around 5. And we also take virtual comments at those meetings. So if somebody can't get to a public hearing, it's too far of a drive, or the timing doesn't work for them in their area, they can call in and give public comment also through the Zoom meeting or via phone. So there's many, many ways to engage, and we just want to hear from the citizens of Michigan.
Matt, you mentioned the census in a previous comment. Can you talk for a minute about how the census process is impacting this process?
Well, so of course, the sort of occasion for doing the redistricting is that we get new data on where people live in Michigan and across the country. The commission is drawing three sets of districts: the U.S. congressional districts, the state house districts, and the state senate districts. The number of state house and senate districts will stay the same, but the congressional districts will be down by one district. But all of the districts will change as a result of the new information that we get, which will be a little bit late coming, but will tell us where people live. And the fundamental criterion that comes in very first is equal population. And so that means that if we have growing parts of the state, like we do up around Traverse City and on the west side of the state, those areas are going to, generate more districts overall than some of the areas that are losing population.
Right, right. And you mentioned that some of those census figures are going to be coming in late. Now, the commission has a deadline, does it not? Is it November 1st? And how does that match up with when we'll be getting the census figures?
So we anticipate getting the full census data by September 30th. The Constitution says that our maps have to be submitted by November 1st with the 45 previous days of public comment. So that puts us back to around September 17th. That does create somewhat of an issue when we don't have the final census data until projected to be after September 30th. So we have filed for relief of up to 72 days from the Michigan Supreme Court in collaboration with the Michigan Department of State and the Bureau of Elections. So we are working together to try to get some days of relief and help to make the process the best it can be, because obviously you cannot do this work without the census data.
Right, right. So you have filed to have, you've basically filed to get more time once the census data are released.
That is correct. We have filed for up to an additional 72 days.
And the question on the other side is, of course, that candidates are going to start running for office. So there's also it has to be finished by the time that that people would be able to still file for those races.
Yeah, certainly. I think filing deadlines are in the spring of 2022. So, Matt, do you have any comment about other groups that are seem to be forming as well to, I hate to use this term, fact check the process? I saw Mr. Daunt has formed a group on his own regarding the redistricting. How do you see, since you prognosticate on politics and policy, how do you see at the end of the day when the commission's work is done, we're not just going to wash our hands and move on, are we? I mean, do you expect various communities of interest, whether they be political or social or cultural, to have a few words about what they see in those men?
Well, as you know, we live in the most litigious country in the world, and the commission has been told from the very beginning that they will be sued, and that's a normal part of the process. They will receive a lot of input from outside, both before and after, and so they're prepared for that. Obviously, even the creation of the commission was subject to a legal oversight and contestation as well. So they're no stranger to those issues, but that's why they've hired a legal counsel and an additional one for Voting Rights Act consideration. So I think they'll be ready for that. But yes, there'll be a lot of input. But Sue, I guess so citizens will have an opportunity to comment after the proposed maps are drawn as well, right? So what why should they give their comments now, I guess, rather than or in addition to waiting to see what's drawn?
Well, in an ideal world, we'd like to get it right the first time. So as much input as we can get over the next few weeks before the maps are drawn. Obviously, the Constitution says that we cannot draw the first line until after the public hearings. So the public hearings are slated to go through July 1st. And then after that time, the commission will start to draw maps with some of the data that is available to them. They will also have the legacy data that comes out, which is untabulated, in mid-August to work with. So when the final census data does come out, hopefully by September 30th, then they should be ready to put the final touches on the maps and do the best job that they can to get them right the first time, though, with the communities of interest identified, with the voices of the citizens taken into consideration. And then we'll go back on the road, though, again, for another 8 rounds of public hearings and 45 days of public comment after the maps are drawn.
And the one of the reasons that citizens commissions have had a good record in the courts is because process does matter. That is, in the previous process, there was a lot happening behind the scenes. And so there was fight over the maps and not a lot of potential to defend them on what criteria they gain, but commissions are able to show that they went through this public process and that they kind of considered these things from the beginning. So where are we on the first part, on the Voting Rights Act considerations? Have we identified someone to help with that, and have we done any analyses of groups that might be covered under that?
We do. In fact, we have our first meeting with our Voting Rights Act legal counsel on Monday. So we're excited that Federal Compliance Consulting and Bruce Adelson, who's a national expert, I think he's probably the best we could have found for the commission. So he will guide that work. We also have a racially polarized analyst that will be working with us, Dr. Lisa Handley. So we do have those things in place, and we're ready to get down to the real work.
And one of the main pieces that we've tried to cover in the education, but I don't know how far we've gotten, is this communities of interest idea. So just give people a sense of what that might mean, and how the commission's been thinking about it, and how citizens have been thinking about it.
So communities of interest are identified in our Constitution as either cultural or historical groups, or groups with shared economic interest, but they're not limited to those groups. So we're listening. We're asking for those communities to come forth and talk to us. We obviously, as 13 independent people on the commission, can't know everybody everywhere in the state and know where those communities are. So they will self-identify. And we're looking forward to learning about more about our state and learning about people who feel that they are better impacted when they're voting together as a group, as a community of interest.
Well, Sue, I want to thank you and the commission for your work. Much like Michigan's infrastructure, there's been a number of potholes that you've had to face along the way. And I have no doubt that the road will continue to be bumpy, but this commission is doing great work. Really appreciate how you've reached out to experts like Matt and others to make sure that as you dive into these issues, you've got the best information available to you. So again, thank you and the commission for your work, and we'll continue to be watching, of course, and assisting where we can.
Thank you.
Matt? Yeah, you're welcome. Matt, anything else for today?
We still encourage people to go and get vaccinated. No lottery in Michigan, but it's going to be better for your health and the health of those around you.
Indeed, get vaccinated. And as Sue Ann noted, pay attention to these public hearings on the Redistricting Commission. And if you're able, you should join at least to listen to the process so you understand how it's taking place.
Submit those maps. We have had some state legislative staffers do it. We had individuals do it. We had students do it. It's actually fun to try to draw your own community. So give it a shot.
And I know that you've engaged your students as well, Matt. So as well as your staff. So we've had an opportunity as well. Appreciate that. Well, thank you, Sue Ann. And thanks again, Matt, for co-hosting this session of State to State. My thanks again to Russ White and the folks at WKAR for their support of this program. Join us again next month on State of the State.